Well, I guess we don't need a quorum to start this, but I have seen a shorter version of this presentation when I went to St. Paul Technical and Community College, and they had a little butterfly that was supposed to look like that guy up there with the white hair, but it didn't work there for a while, but now we've got everything under control, right? Is this now, Mr. Niemi, is this where some of our, what will now be about $55 or $57 million went?
Yes, Mr. Chair, this is where some of it's going.
Okay.
Help support the infrastructure behind it.
So welcome to the committee. I'll just let you folks introduce yourselves and we'll...
Thank you very much. My name is Donovan Switzenberg, and it's my privilege and pleasure to be president of St. Paul College. We have about four people presenting today, and each one will introduce themselves as we go along. We're here to talk about the next generation technology in higher education, something that is very important to us and very important to Minnesota. We think technology is going to make a big difference in businesses in Minnesota and also have opportunity for worldwide attention in some of the things that we're doing. We all know that technology and education is very necessary as we look at what's going on in colleges, as we look at what's going on in business. The technology that's available there means that we have to be able to keep that technology at the colleges, and also we hope to be leading in some of the technology that's available across the country in order to provide better employment for businesses in Minnesota. We know that it's required to develop 21st century job skills for 21st century students. It's a mechanism to control costs when used correctly. And it's a primary vehicle to deliver education to a larger proportion of the student body in greater geographic areas, which I know is one of our concerns in Minnesota, to make sure all students from all parts of the state have good opportunities for education. To do all this, we need a solid infrastructure, and to speak to that, I'll turn it over to Tim Meany.
You know, it's not too often that I get to do this kind of exciting stuff. Most of my work is pretty darn boring. I've been in the back room, and it's not as exciting as what goes on in the classroom at all. However, all that work is what keeps me going anyway, is knowing that does translate into something that changes in the classroom and in the lives of students moving forward. So that's why I get a little bit excited about some of these things, and particularly excited about St. Paul College. And I live in St. Paul now, so it's almost like my local institution, and I like to help support it. But I don't think there's any place in the country where some of this leading edge work in this area is being done as well as it is at St. Paul College. And I think it's with people like Warren Schaefer who are doing the real work in the classroom with students that really makes this technology come to life. Technology is there to help in the whole education process. It's not just for back office operations in the administrative side. It helps in a lot of other ways. One is in the area of lowering the cost of remedial education. I think you've all heard about the increasing issues and ongoing issues with students not being prepared once they come to one of our institutions. And the use of technology when properly applied is one really good way at a lower cost to provide that remedial education. It's something that can help and be done on a student's own time. There's also the area of access for people with disabilities to be able to take classes at their home, to better access materials as they move forward. So there's some real advantages in that as technology has increased. I spent a lot of my career dealing with those disabled issues, and they used to be really tough ones, particularly for the blind. And with the new tools that are available, that's a much better approach in assisting the disabled to use the technology. Also provides an opportunity through the use of the Internet 2 for interaction with students and faculty from around the world. Now, Internet 2 is an infrastructure piece that ties the network all across the world, and we have a number of instances where these students are collaborating worldwide in forwarding their education. So it's a real great opportunity from that standpoint. It also is the technology helps provide a means of handling these ever-increasing rates of change. Things are changing so quickly and exponentially growing use of information. So it's really a valuable tool in that rather than hard copy textbooks that are very expensive and in many cases are outdated as soon as they're printed. So it's a real tool that allows that to continue to move forward.
Who'd like you to...
I should have had Mr. Nimi just for the taste of interview.
I will. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Ken Nimi, the Vice Chancellor for Information Technology for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities System.
And Mr. Schaefer, the same thing.
I'm Warren Schaefer. I'm an instructor. Happy to be an instructor at St. Paul Community and Technical College in the Computer Science Department. One of the things we thought you might like to take a look at is the video. It's quite a popular video, one of the most viewed videos in YouTube, but it speaks to this whole idea of evolving needs in education. Now, if we get a good network connection here, and I think we just had one, I'd like you to take a moment just to review what some people are saying.
We'll be right back.
That's the end of that video, primarily targeted at teachers, I might add. To face that world, which isn't far from what we're facing every day in our classroom, we have to keep abreast or even ahead of the wave. And technological wave today is more like a tsunami. And to do that, we need partnerships. And we partnered over the years with a company that has helped us keep our costs low and maintain what I consider to be the highest reliability, most advanced technology that is in education anywhere today. And that company is Sun Microsystems. So today I brought with me our partner and friend, Robert Reagan from Sun Microsystems, who will discuss our college's relationship with Sun in the context of the technologies we are going to discuss.
Hi, my name is Robert Reagan. I'm a local territory manager with Sun. Been with Sun since 1999, and my primary focus is working with universities, colleges throughout the state of Minnesota. I'm here today to talk about our relationship and our partnership with Minsky and with St. Paul College. What we did specifically with St. Paul College is enter into what we call a Sun Center of Excellence, and we saw a lot of value in it from a couple of aspects. One, they had a very strong education aspect in Java, and also an interest in looking at some of the leading technologies like virtual worlds. We looked at the aspect of the fact that they've got a lot of students going through their class, and we wanted to take advantage of that and really elevate the relationship and put a focal point on the map for them. So there's a lot of recognition going on with St. Paul College from Sun, from the Sun executives, from Jonathan Schwartz and others as well. So a center of excellence is really, and it kind of explains it here, it's given to an organization that we recognize in it a very high standard and a competency in information technology. And again, that competency has been in Java and also in a programming language called NetBeans. Another area, of course, is the virtual world technology. So there's three aspects, again. Java, open source technology. So there's a lot of open source software out there today. That's a big part of Sun's contribution to the world. And then, of course, the virtual world technology. And there's two elements of virtual world. There's the Second Life world, which you probably know about. And then there's also an element from Sun called Project Darkstar, which is also an open source a project that delves into the virtual world. At one of the more recent visits that we had, Jonathan Schwartz, our CEO, made a comment about St. Paul College, and it pretty much spells it out here, that they do Sun technology better than Sun. And coming from Jonathan, that's quite a compliment. I think he sees the value in what's going on there and sees a lot of opportunities for growth. So what did St. Paul College do? Well, they started out with what we call thin clients. And these are very low-cost alternatives to PCs. They put them in their classroom for access to web-based applications and the Internet. So they provide 24/7 remote access with those devices. And they also have a Java curriculum where they certify students to be Java programmers. Now this is the configuration that we started with at St. Paul College, and now I'll turn it over to the person that designed it and implemented it, Warren Schaefer.
Warren Schaefer back again, instructor at St. Paul College. As you look at this diagram, there are two blocks highlighted. I'd like to emphasize that this has been a real positive partnership. Those are contributed pieces of software. They're not insignificant in cost. Sun and our vendor, Collier Computer, collaborated with the contribution that makes that advanced technology platform possible today. Now, we've had a very successful implementation and it's resulted in a very low-cost implementation. We move all our training, other than our networking training, to the platform. and we train on all major software platforms. In point of fact, I think the bottom bullet point says it all. The school actually profited from the install. It was a net positive income because the applications we were able to deploy on this technology were in high enough demand that students paid a software access fee to get access and training on those platforms. Now, that resulted, the aggressive application of that technology resulted in this recognition from Sun, but no one gets anywhere by themselves. You have to have supporters and partners. And I'd like to thank Robert Reagan, who was here today and introduced me, Al Essa, our Vice Chancellor of IT, who cannot be here, and of course, a man that you all know very well, Ken Meany, for their vision and leadership. Also, thanks to the Collier Computing Company, our primary vendor. Now, I want to talk real quickly about our visit to Sun. We did make a visit to the ERC. It's called the Executive Briefing Center. It is where the SunSoft executives are headquartered. We did our presentation, and it was reviewed well enough that the CEO came down the next day to see the presentation again. It's a wonderful educational experience to visit that site to see some of the most advanced technologies in the world demonstrated there. Our expertise was Java training based on the number of students we've gotten certified. Open source application, if you don't know what open source is, it's a movement that's going to take a large part of your economic future, in at least that part that's affected by IT. You'll have the source whenever someone gives you the software. It's not necessarily free, it's perceived to be. Sun is a very major player in the open source software movement. The third one is sort of the sexier technology, is virtual worlds, and this is where we see applications of this technology in education. First, let's talk about Java and jobs, because that's really what we're all about. I think when Representative Rukavina visited the college, I made the statement that if I can get a kid out of a fry line at McDonald's and into a $25 an hour job someplace like Medtronic, I win. I've done a good job. That's a victory for me. But we are training at the college right now people on the Java platform. These are some representative per hour numbers of what people leaving our college are capable of earning. They work in major corporations around the Twin Cities and have founded a couple of very successful startups, as a matter of fact. We also maintain an active presence in the Java community. I'd like to make mention that right now there is a dearth of Java programmers in Minnesota. And in a quite an ironic twist, there is a demand for higher cost labor than we have here in Minnesota because we don't have the talent available to us. That goes into the cry and shame category. Where if we would have had the programmers, the jobs are open. Now they're having to go overseas and pay people more money to come and do our work for us. We're trying to address some of that in a small way. Also, our open source software commitment has been long standing. We open source not only our software, but in our departmental area, our curriculum is all open. So anything we do, we open the curriculum. And we recently have an excellent textbook on open source published by Joe Hess in Open to the World. The book is free. Now let's talk about the virtual world. These are massive multiplayer online virtual environments. And certain examples of these are Second Life, which is currently the biggest, World of Warcraft, another major player, and there. Growth in this area is explosive. This diagram was constructed as a semicircle to illustrate that in the beginning, there were relatively few participants, and over a very short period of time, they are experiencing exponential growth in two critical dimensions, the number of participants and their revenue growth. Now, this is a small slide, but I just want to point out a couple important numbers on it, a small print slide. $500 million went into virtual communities in the fourth quarter of 2007. And by Gartner, an IT forecasting group predicts that 80% of internet users are going to have a presence in one of these worlds by 2011. And the average the annual revenue for these things is over $1 billion. So it's not an insignificant industry. The first millionaire in Second Life was created by selling real estate within our community. We were proactive in becoming a part of virtual worlds. We see it as a platform to educate about and a platform to educate off of. This is a video that has kind of a neat side consequence. I'm going to play part of it for you. This is what our students have done in Second Life.
Hi, my name is Jerry Pearson, and I'm an instructor here in the Computer Careers Department at Penn Tech Iris. Today I'm going to be taking you on a virtual tour of Second Life. We're going to be talking about Penn Tech Iris' program in Second Life on Wednesday Island. So, come on!
Welcome to Minsky Island. You can see that I am standing on the dock here, right outside the Minsky Pavilion, and we're going to give a little tour here to see what we've created here. Minsky, by the way, is short for Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. St. Paul College is a member of them, as well as many other two-year and four-year colleges in Minnesota. Also, it should be noted that today's date is April 26, 2007, so if you come to Second Life at a later date, you might see that quite a bit of construction has gone on. So, let's continue our tour here. Our first stop along the way is the Minsky Pavilion. We can see this is an area where people can come and watch various presentations, hang out, chat with each other. We can see over to the right a Coke machine right over there. And over to my left we see a video presentation center. We've currently loaded some commercials that St. Paul College has had on them. And I'll show
you. I want to be an auto body technician.
Computer programmer.
Business manager.
Surveyor. With more than 70 technical programs, St. Paul College opens the door to many career paths, from full-time employment to career enhancement to starting your own business. Give us a call or log on to www.stpaul.edu.
So, we can see those were some commercials that we have. Our second stop, we have a series of billboards that we've placed around the island that give web links to various Minsky institutions. We can see one, two, three, four, five, about six of them here, six or seven, and we have other billboards scattered around the island here. We can see looking at them, we have Minnesota West, St. Paul College, Moorhead University, Hibbing Community College, North Hennepin Community College, and Southwest Technical. And if we go up to any of these and touch them, it's going to give us a prompt to load a web page. I'm going to cancel for now, but it would load the web page of the college associated with it. Behind us, we have the amphitheater. Now, I've been walking around so far in Second Life, but I'm going to fly over there quickly just by hitting the page up button. I can see that I can fly. I'll move over and land in the amphitheater area. We see this as a very large potential lecture hall. We can see quite a bit of seating out there. An instructor can either be up here with students out in the seats, or we can play video demonstrations. We have a different video loaded here, which I'll demo in 1 second here. Hello, this is Darren Pearson. I'm an instructor in the Computer Careers Department at St. Paul College, and today I'm going to be giving a demonstration on Second Life. In particular, I'm going to be doing a tour of Minsky Island, and St. Paul College was one of our older presentation videos that we used to demonstrate Second Life. We've made quite a few updates since there's been a lot of construction going on, especially in the last month or so here. So, this is our amphitheater. We have two more major stops on our tour. St. Paul College itself, and next to it, the Flower Garden. and can fly over and land. And inside here, we've added a couple of language class demos, Spanish in this case. We found some podcasts for entitled Coffee Break Spanish, and we've set up multiple listening areas. This is episodes 1 through 4. Let's take a listen to episode number 1 right now.
Coffee Break Spanish, program 1. You're listening to Coffee Break Spanish.
The Spanish brings the language bless your latte.
With Coffee Break Spanish, you're going to be learning to speak and understand the language.
You see people with a promotion or travel the world.
We can see that has 4 podcasts that you can choose from. If we move over to this next area, we have Coffee Break Spanish listening area 2. This contains podcasts 5, 6, 7, and 8. And in the back there, we have, I believe, 3 other areas for the various podcasts. So if you want to learn a new language, this is an ideal way to do so. They're pretty short, about 15 minutes. Walking next door here, I'm coming up to a building that should be familiar to anyone who's been to St. Paul College in the real world. This is our mock-up of St. Paul College in Second Life. You can see St. Paul College, and down to the right there, we can actually see 235 for 235 Marshall Avenue, where St. Paul College is located in the real world. And I'll walk up. And open a door. Now, when I walk in, we have another video monitor. We're going to be putting some of the SPC commercials there, as well as a greeting from various faculty and staff at St. Paul College. To my left, I can see a box that contains a free t-shirt and a ball cap. This is the one that I'm wearing right now. Let's see here. So I'll zoom in. If you find them fashionable, you can certainly grab one. They're free here. St. Paul College cap and St. Paul College shirt. On the wall here, we currently have the 4 full-time, let me center it there, the 4 full-time faculty members here at St. Paul College, myself, Kendall, Leroy Chandler, and Warren Schaefer. As we click on any one of these, it will pull up a web page that directs us to the profile for that particular person at St. Paul College. And back here, we've added a digital photography expo. Leroy Chandler has a class in digital photography, and his students decided to create a virtual art gallery to show off their work. So we'll take a quick walk through here. A lot of the subjects here are kind of nature photography, especially around the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. We can see some familiar sites here. We see Minnehaha Falls, various shots of the Mississippi River, some wildlife that we find along there, plus various other wildlife that we find around the state. Here's a shot of, I believe this is taken from St. Paul College, looking out at, I think it's Kellogg Avenue. So, some very pretty shots that we have here. Also, the gallery itself is kind of nice. It's set up in sort of an art gallery sort of feel of photos along the wall and photos displayed in the middle. So, we'll leave the gallery here. And return to the front door. So, thank you very much for your time. And please look us up the next time you're in Second Life. Just do a search for MNSCU, and we look forward to meeting you. Thanks, and have a good day.
What's exciting about that video was it was created, we started this project. It was done on a fast development track using something called Web 2.0 technology. Now, Web 2.0 technology is one of the things. In an earlier comment was mentioned, how do we get away from expensive textbooks? Web 2.0 technologies in our department is one of the ways we're going to cut down textbook costs. We're very sensitive to that. open source approach. Also, we use a very open source approach to development and asset sharing. We had a team of students. I'd like to emphasize that everything that you saw in that video was done by the students. It was not done by the faculty. It was under our direction, but we made them do the work. So they went away with a skill set. And it was fast track. We started March 15th, and it was on the 21st. We're kind of famous in Second Life for the speed it was producing. We were, as a result of some of this, we were invited to Germany to speak about virtual worlds in education. This seminar was held in Detmold, Germany. You probably don't know him, but he is the Consul General of the United States to Germany, and some kind of a friend of mine. And this woman is the Director of Education for UNESCO. Following our presentation, at which we were given an award, here I won a prize for the best talk, we we got this prize for having the best talk, and we were invited to go to the United Nations. Before we did that, we were searching around Germany, of course, for economic development opportunities. And this is my friend Aki, who I met in a virtual world, and he and I took a very real world tour of a brewery in Tampa, and that's one of the pictures. We make friends all over the world very easily. This was the talk we gave at the United Nations in Bonn, and our motto is open source and open to the world. When you get at the cost of education, you get at the cost of things like intellectual property rights. You know, some people cringe when I say that, but I'm very committed to people having access to materials I create while I'm a faculty member. And the unexploring part of our talk was to move from e-learning to v-learning. We do have excellent, MinSkyU has excellent online technology, but there's something missing in that human interaction. We can't have that all over the state. We can't force enough volume into a classroom. It's just not enough economics, there's not enough students. So you ask yourself, how can we get that teacher-student interaction? How do you stimulate that? How do you get all the good things that come out of that? Virtual worlds appear to be one way of achieving it. So we gave this talk, it was very well received at the UN. We actually have the UN asking us about a collaboration. They want to designate St. Paul College. St. Paul College is a center of excellence in technical and vocational education. Here, we have a case of that's a German faculty member, actually, conducting a class in English. This is what was presented to the UN on MinSkyU Island. Due to the speed at which we implemented it, we have more European users of MinSkyU Island right now than we do MinSkyU faculty. That now has changed dramatically. We created, as a result of our experience in Second Life, we recognize need to isolate. You can't have pornography, foul language, and so forth in your educational world. Some people are very sensitive to that. You have to be sensitive to their needs. So we worked with Sun on the notion of developing our own platform. I want to talk about this because I think it's an important project, and it's getting worldwide recognition. Again, we have more international members of Project Virtual North Star than we do people from Minnesota. That now is beginning to change. It's MinSkyU's own Second Life platform, and it's hosted and under development here at St. Paul College. It utilizes Sun's Wonderland, ArcStar, and Voiceproof technology, and it has its own website associated with it. I think that'll come up. You can Google it. It's at Project Virtual North Star. And in fact, you can become a member. You can watch the project develop. As a result of our involvement with that technology, we were invited to a worldwide education and research conference. This is a group of the world's leading thinkers and me. Aaron Jonathan, Mike, Joshua, and Warren. This was a panel. There were about 400 people Aaron Welch is out at Boston College. He's the director of their program. Jonathan Richter is the head of education, technical application of technology and education at the University of Oregon. Joshua Marks is the chief technologist at CRICI, open source curriculum movement. I'm from St. Paul College in Berkeley North Star. And on the right is a very good friend of mine from Essex University, whom we are working with currently on a project that we are going to apply here in Minnesota called Myrtle. And that's Mike Gardner. He's a very nice fellow, too. Likes jazz music. This is the Myrtle technology, and I think you're going to see more of this in education in one form or another. So I thought, again, I would show a brief little video. And then I want to talk about the practical applications of this in product development, in manufacturing, and perhaps advanced automation.
The Myrtle project aims to bridge the gap between physical and virtual classrooms. In this movie, we demonstrate the use of Myrtle in a traditional classroom setting. It's a prototype installation to explore the practical issues involved in running a mixed reality classroom. The virtual classroom has been built on top of Project Wonderland and is situated in the campus grounds at the University of Essex in the UK. The classroom contains additional technology to provide an audio and video bridge between the physical and virtual classrooms. Loudspeakers and a large TV screen have been installed at the rear of the classroom. Both have been connected to a PC. The speakers broadcast the audio from within the virtual classroom, and the TV displays the remote student's avatars. The screen is visible to all the students in the physical classroom and attempts to give the impression of a virtual classroom annex. So the students in the physical classroom are able to see and hear their remote counterparts, and the teachers in the physical classroom are able to see and hear all the students, present and remote. As far as the teachers in the physical classroom are concerned, it all seems fairly traditional, with slides projecting onto a screen at the front of the room. A web camera is mounted directly beneath the TV screen. This streams the video of the physical classroom into the virtual classroom. There is also a microphone in the physical classroom, positioned in the center of the desk, so that it can pick up the audio from the students and the teachers. So the remote students can see and hear the students and teachers in the physical classroom. Remote students typically use a headset. This means that remote students can talk and listen to other remote students, and also with those in the physical classroom. Here we can see that the remote student has logged into Myrtle and is positioning his avatar. At the front of the virtual classroom, positioned on the wall, are two windows. One, on the left, contains a video broadcast from the web camera in the physical classroom. On the right is a window containing a view of the slides to be used in the class. Remote students can also see the avatar representations of their colleagues in the virtual classroom. We join the class just as it gets underway.
Welcome to this morning's lecture. My name is Janet Smith from the International Academy.
My name is Camille Lagasse. I am doing PhD in language teaching. And if you just introduce yourself, could you start specifically?
Hello, my name is Sandra. I'm a student at the International Academy.
Thank you, Sandra.
Hello, my name is Danny. I'm a student at the International
Academy.
Thank you, Danny. I'm a student at the International
Academy. Thank you very much. We also have seven other students joining us, so if you'd like to just wave hello to the screen.
Hello.
Hi. Who's that? Classroom 4 on the circuit. And these are the ends of the class today.
So the ends of this class are to understand the importance of classroom speaking test, and then to be familiar with different formats of speaking test, like interview test, group test, or monologue test, and also to talk about some basic familiarity with the rating scales and standardization. Okay? So firstly, we will talk about test purposes.
In the virtual classroom, we can see that Michael is trying to ask a question.
Michael, I see you've got a question. Go ahead.
Thanks. Could you go to the definition of washbay then for me?
Yes. Washbay is the effect of testing on teaching and learning, and we have positive washbay and negative washbay. Positive washback is the positive effect of testing on learning and teaching, and negative washback is negative effect of testing on learning and teaching. Is that okay, Michael?
Thank you.
Now, Michael could have been a student anywhere in the world. He could have been a student in a high school in a northwestern corner of Minnesota that wanted to take a class in Java programming at St. Paul College. His avatar would be present in the room. I would interact with the avatar, and he would interact with me directly through the television hookup. So the advantage of this over closed-circuit television is that anyone that has access to a PC, a moderately priced PC, can access in-class instructor-guided education, and that instructor-guided education is the important part. So what, where are we going with our project? And I thought we'd like to do a little informing here, and then I want to show you the where the rubber hits the road in terms of virtual world and economic development. Where is the tie in this? So what we're going to do, we're creating our own Minsky Island, and I can say with a certain degree of pride that today we managed to do that. This day we took the work that was in Second Life and moved it into our own secure web server. We're creating a virtualization of the Sun COE, our physical Sun COE. We're going to create a virtual partner to it. We've entered a partnership with Felix Beckenbach Brooks College in Germany, Atlanta Technical College, to develop a course internationally and deliver it internationally, a three-dimensional course. We also have a partnership with the United Nations in the offing for development of this type of platform for technical and vocational education on a worldwide basis. We're starting an effort to bridge to Croquet. It's another virtual world project. Actually has some of the groups in Minnesota. And this is the one that has the world kind of excited. If we can do this, really, in a small information technology world, we would have accomplished a big thing. And the one that I like the best, though, is the virtual tutoring platform of St. Paul Public School System. Everyone's familiar with problems in K-12, and the idea there was to create a virtual place for students that need to be tutored to go to and have an instructor tutor them in off hours, not having a tutor come to your house, for instance. This is an example of a classroom in which we have that going on. So what is the practical application to this? I'd like you to sit through one more video. I promise you that if you are interested at all in technology, this video will captivate you. It did me, and I think everyone I showed it to. And it illustrates the tie-in between, this is hard, I think, for people sometimes to grasp, the tie-in between the developing virtual world and what actually happens in the world that we live in. This one video is an application of a product that was actually created, or development of a product that was actually created in a virtual world. And of course, it's backed, financial backing with DARPA, you know, so I imagine some of the things that can be, that are capable, you can't, we as a general population shouldn't really see. So where does this lead? Why are, that's, how's this tie back into my talk today? And where is St. Paul College, and where do we as educators see a role for ourselves in the world that something like this is going to exist? And first of all, where do you create it economically? The company, I happen to actually know the guy, who's a, you know, you're a graduate student, and you eat spaghetti 6 days a week, if you're lucky. He works down the hall from me. And his firm has two product lines, let's say. One of them is a virtual world product line called DieGuy, that's with Boston Dynamics, in which the robots are fabricated virtually, tested virtually, and before any machine tool touches a piece of metal, before any machine tool touches a piece of metal, those things are tested conceptually in the virtual world. The virtual worlds have the capacity for direct application in an industrial setting. In this case, we're looking at more of a military setting. Still a significant part of the economy. So what are we going to do going forward? Well, we're going to take our technology and attack some of the problems in education, something we always think about, you know, want to do some good while we're down here. We're going to look at the viability of eliminating or reducing the number of textbooks. I'm going to go for zero textbooks in my curriculum. We're going to try to replace them with electronic readers, network computers. Network computers, a type of computer, not a computer network. And social networking sites, I believe have the greatest potential to eliminate the second book. The primary book, I think, would be a cultural change to get rid of that one. But the recommended reading, you know, the one that takes your course from like $100 to $500 course in textbook prices, I think we have a real good shot at getting rid of those. We're going to continue to be an advocacy for open sourcing curriculum. I know that's not the most popular position in the academic world to hold, but Toss has been given so much, why can't we just come back at the philosophy that we have? And that's a small give back, as much as we've gotten over our own. And we also want to continue our integration of our college in its working relationship with the university. Our institution has a mission for education, for life, and education for work, education for work, education for life. We want people to leave our college with skills, but be able to go on to get that four-year degree. And we're going to continue to work with our Minsky partners to develop this center where we can test these technologies out and see if we can make a dent in some of these areas. Is it working? Well, is our effort working? You always have to point and say, well, we've done something. Well, here a company that we've worked with is actually changing its fundamental marketing plan to shift into a metaverse marketing model. And we have more than one firm doing that. And I don't think I have a lot of time for questions, but if you have any quick questions, I'll be happy to answer.
Questions from the members at all? Maybe you can, Warren, just a little more in-depth discussion on the involvement between you and Sun Microsystems. Did you put on an RFP and it was bid on?
But to become involved with Sun?
Yeah.
Sun was, we actually, well, it's kind of it's an old story, actually. I got involved with Sun Microsystems because of my dad. I was home on a vacation and was complaining to him about the computers weren't able to work at the college I was teaching at, and they were unreliable. And he used to go to the library. And he took me down to the public library and said, why don't you get these things? they never go off. They work all the time, and the kid that runs them tells me they're very, very cheap. And it turned out to be a Sunray 100 device. And I came back, and at the time, replacing this equipment is phenomenally expensive. So 10 years ago, why? Well, you know, what are the structural components of cost? Well, the structural components of cost is the lifetime of the piece of equipment, licensing, and the one we overlook quite frequently is maintenance. When my dean at that time and I looked into the technology, the cost per seat was about $600. That was 10 years ago. We've operated that same equipment 10 years, 24 hours a day, and never, rarely had a failure. So I approached Sun, I guess, is the way. And then we continued over the years to work together on whatever the new idea was that they came up with, Representative Rukavina, they brought it to us, and we'd go ahead and implement. So I guess we took the pain, if you will, of implementing a new technology. We've experimented with a number of them. And did I answer your question?
Yeah, I am.
So we actually sought them out because of, in that era, there was more demand than we could meet for training on hardware. The hardware platforms that were available couldn't support the software for which the training was demanded on. So we sought Sun out, and we come up with a low-cost solution. Basically, I guess I can answer your question because my dad told me to do it. Was that a fair answer?
That's a fair answer. I'm just wondering if, you know, Mr. Reagan or to you, are your competitors, Mr. Reagan, are they jealous? Are they complaining to the Minsky system and that? His dad told you to work with...
We always have competition, and we always try to be very transparent and very fair. I think we have some very education-friendly programs, such as the matching grant program, which the academic world can take advantage of. We also have... we offer free training as well that they can take advantage of and get certified. We call it the Sun Academic Initiative. And those are the kinds of things that we work with instructors like Warren with. There's just some that are more passionate than others that see the value in things like Java and the thin client technology and open source technology. So it made for a good match. And I think, as I said before, the executives and perhaps competition see a good thing here. So we want to grow it and build it. Does that answer your question?
Mm-hmm. Representative Detmer, do you foresee an avatar being able to teach wrestling, or do you think that you're going to we're going to continue to need a live body like you to demonstrate the holds and everything?
And Mr. Chairman, with my military background too, I've run into a lot of the Sun systems in the military, and I don't know how we can incorporate that into virtual wrestling. You know, we could that might save a lot of cauliflower ears, maybe. So.
Okay, we appreciate the presentation. Are there any other questions from the members? I thought the committee might be rather interested in this, although I still have to, as I've mentioned a million times before, I when it comes to technology, I'm not only a dinosaur, I'm a one-celled amoeba, so, I'm still trying to get Quest to give me DSL, so I imagine I couldn't call in on this because my... character would still just the head would be coming down on the screen right now, so I'd still be up in Pike River, But
if I could mention in response to what the wrestling comment, because I love sports, and the one thing in sports that makes an athlete always go up to that next level is the presence of that coach. I used to swim. and someone could hand me a workout that would make me an Olympic caliber athlete, and if they gave that same workout to you and a swimmer and put us in two different training facilities, who's going to win? The coached athlete is always going to win. And one of the things the virtual world does is bring the coach into contact with the athlete figuratively. And I guess that's where some of my passion for it comes from, knowing I could have never swum as fast as I did had it not been for the coach. And if I couldn't have got to where the coach was, I could have never have attained that level in sport. So we take that same model in virtual world and say, of course, the best thing is to have Coach Detmer there. But if you can't be there, what's the next best? And virtual world provides that presence in an eerie way that I wish I'm not a psychologist, I can't explain it, but that's, I think, where my, if you pick up on my enthusiasm for it, that's where it comes from. It actually comes from sports.
Members, anything else? Okay. Thank you very much. Meeting adjourned. Oh, excuse me, I haven't minutes yet, so Representative Haas moved the minutes of the April 9th meeting. Any additions or corrections? Not all those in favor, signify by saying
aye. Mr. Chairman.
Representative.
Last Saturday, I attended the National Wrestling Hall of Fame, and I'm a member of that organization. And I'd like to bring attention to Representative Haas. His brother, Terry Haas, was just inducted in that. The late Terry Haas was just inducted in the National Wrestling Hall of Fame, and his name and plaque will be in the National Hall of Fame down in Stillwater, Oklahoma, through the Minnesota chapter. And his brother is just an icon of wrestling here in Minnesota through the high school, and he ended his career at St. John's University, and just an outstanding person. I remember him when I was in college wrestling, just an outstanding person, and some great tribute that was brought to him on Saturday, and I got to meet Representative Haas' sister, Mary Haas, so I got to sit at the table with them. So, just congratulations.
Congratulations, Representative Haas. Okay, all those in favor of that approval of the minutes, signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed. Meeting is adjourned, I guess. Thank you. Thank you.